Tai Chi's arrest. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's saying in her sleep, brother's got a date to keep, he can't hang around. Ayo's house
in the middle of our street.
Ayo's house.
Isles House, episode 21, I think, before we get into the last two games, discuss the playoff push. We got to take care of the housekeeping. Follow us on Twitter. Follow our podcast page at Isles House. Follow us individually at EthanGSN, at Pizza Sports Guy, at Isles Den, at eGreenberg99. Subscribe to the pod. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Guys, if you're a loyal listener, rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. Helps us jump up the rankings. Let's jump into it. Over to Jack for the usual recap ramblings.
Gentlemen, I think for this week we have a theme. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Let's dive into it. So Thursday night, after we recorded last before the Penguins game, the Islanders were up 3-1 in the third period in a huge game at home against Montreal. What do? They challenge a goaltender interference. They don't get the call. Next thing we know, the game's in overtime. Luckily, Bo Horvat bails us out, and the Islanders come away with a win. Then we move to Saturday, where we played the Flames. And there we were once again. Kyle McLean puts the Isles on top late in the third period. And not even before I could blink, the Flames tie the game. J.G. Pageau loses a huge faceoff. We'll get to him in a little bit. And then next thing you know, Kadri scores in overtime. And just to touch on that real quick, the Islanders really ruined an electric moment on Saturday afternoon, because when Kyle McLean, of all people, scores the goal to put you ahead, to maybe put you into a playoff spot, and it's gone within 30 seconds, that was kind of heartbreaking. Next, we have last night, which we will get into. Isles up 2-0. Some, in my opinion, not Dobson or Sorokin's best game, but I mean, at some point you have to just realize the luck that went into some of those goals. I mean, we're up 2-1, we're on the power play. Power play is garbage, and bad luck's a result of putting yourself in that position. And Boone Jenner takes a shot, it hits off Dobson's stick, it takes a ridiculous bounce, goes over Sorokin, game's tied up at 2. Lee answers a few minutes later. And then next thing you know, Isles go to the third up 3-2. And there it came, the avalanche from the Blue Jackets. Islanders outshot 17-4 in the third period. I mean, it's crazy being a fan of this team, because you'll have a lead for 50 minutes within the game. And by the end of it, I was literally just praying we were going to get a point. And then that changed very quickly when I thought that Kyle Palmieri tipped the puck past Merzlikins to put the Islanders ahead 4-3 with what would have been, I believe, 9 seconds left in the third period. And chaos ensued, as you all know, and it didn't count. Game went to overtime. Nothing happened there. Do you want to point out, there was a good chance for Ryan Pulock in that overtime, where I saw a lot of people frustrated with him that he didn't finish it. And I was just laughing after, because I went back to watch the replay, and I suggest you all do it as well. That goal would not have counted. That would have been goaltender interference. Then we went to the shootout. We got to watch Anthony Duclair do his best to get on the ESPN, not top 10, if that still exists. And the Islanders, in true Islander fashion, don't score in the shootout. And here we are, 1 point out of a playoff spot, with the Canadians, I believe, trailing 4-1 in the third period. And it looks like tomorrow night, the Isles will have their chance again.
Against a Pedersen-less Vancouver Canucks.
Correct.
I might add.
They're missing a couple of guys, right? They're missing Hoglander. Who's the other guy? Hoglander, a couple guys.
Yep. I know it was Hoglander and Pedersen.
Great recap from Jack. It's cool. I jumped straight into the Palmieri stuff. Disallowed goal now. Good with that.
Yeah, why not? Let's right work backwards. It.
Yeah, so honestly, last night's game, probably the angriest I've been after a hockey game since the playoffs last year. We've had a lot of rough ones this season. You could accept losing, but it's a lot harder to accept a loss like that when you feel a referee truly took it away. And that's honestly how I felt. Like, the second that puck went in, He comes flying in. No goal. It almost felt like he had an agenda.
Well, it's ridiculous because I never see with other teams them wave it off without a challenge, but continue.
Yeah, it's just like it wasn't the wave off didn't match the offense, to kind of go Larry David here, where the thank you didn't match the gesture, if we've watched Curb in here. But
great pull.
The wave off was a little aggressive for what he thought Palmieri did, because one, I mean, he grazed the crease, maybe like the heels of his skates maybe were in the crease. It wasn't like his full body was in the crease. I thought Merzlikins was the one that initiated the contact, and he can push him, right? Like if he feels he's in that area, push him, whatever, fine. But the fact that you're going to blame Palmieri when the goalie got reset, and then you have a beautiful deflection, and you're going to act like what Palmieri did affected the goaltender's ability to stop that in any way, shape, or form. And one of my favorite pulls from Patrick Waugh in the postgame was mentioning that Laine goal that Montreal scored against the Islanders. Now, I thought that goal should have standed because Sorokin was in an odd position, kind of took himself out of position. But Waugh made a great point in that there was much more contact on that goal than there was with the Palmieri goal. And it was a pretty similar area of the ice where it's the top of the crease and kind of borderline whether or not there was contact in the crease. So I thought that was a great, you know, presser from Waugh in that regard. Called out Toronto, called out a number of things. But that was my favorite part when he compared it to Montreal, because that's what it is with these goaltender interferences, right? There is zero consistency and they make it up as they go. And if you have this little rat referee that just feels like putting on a show because Wes McCauley is taking all the attention, comes out of nowhere, waves it off, and then they review it, whatever went on, call on the ice stands. And as Greeny mentioned, as we were prepping, the call on the ice is a big deal because it's very hard to overturn. And it's just a very, very shitty feeling after that loss. It was such a big game. It would have been such a moment for Palmieri to get that goal with what was it, 9 seconds left? Like, yeah, the game was over.
The game was over. Counter.
So it's just so frustrating. I'm honestly still annoyed. Like, I think about it and I get annoyed because it's just taken away. It's like the rug pulled out from under you.
So I think go for it, Jack.
They should have won a game and they didn't, but I do really appreciate Patrick Waugh in the post game, just getting up there and saying it how it is. I mean, I remember a few years ago when Mayfield got high sticked in the playoffs and the Hurricanes scored on the ensuing play in overtime. Like, I don't remember Liam Lambert like sticking up for the Islanders like that. And like, you have to remember, this is Patrick Waugh. Like, this is a legend of the league. So him not taking that shit around here, I just love that from him.
And he's probably going to be hearing from the league also for how he was ripping into them. But anyway, it was justified. I think the most frustrating part, and Rocco kind of alluded to it, it's like that gray area around the league with goaltender interference. And I think the thing that annoyed me the most about the play was the fact that it was waved off initially, when in that situation, any scoring play was automatically going to be reviewed, which I don't think a lot of people like realized at the moment. The Blue Jackets, remember, did not have a challenge. They lost their challenge earlier in the game. So they wouldn't have been able to challenge even if they tried. No team is allowed to challenge in the last 2 minutes anyway. So when you have like a bang bang play like that, I don't understand the point of waving it off. And Brendan actually mentioned this on the broadcast last night, that the decision to wave it off on the ice changes the context in which the officials on the ice and the people in Toronto are going to review the play. So just so everyone is aware, the people in Toronto are not making the call themselves. They're simply advising the on-ice officials that are looking at the play on an iPad. I think people think that Toronto can have that final decision. They don't. The referees on the ice have final say and can override anything that they hear from Toronto. Now, going back to what I was saying before about the call on the ice, when they called it no goal and then they go to the monitor. Essentially, what Toronto and the on-ice officials are looking for at that point is proof that there wasn't goaltender interference because it was called no goal. Whereas if they had left it as a goal and then reviewed that goal for potential goalie interference, all of a sudden what they're looking for instead is proof that there is goaltender interference. And at that point, it would have been very difficult to overturn the call because, as we all have seen a million times now, he was out of the crease. There was minimal contact initiated by the goaltender. So what really killed them was the fact that the call on the ice was no goal. That should not have been the case. I've seen it across the league, bang, bang plays. They even tell linesmen, like when we're talking about offsides, you know, if it's close, let the play run, let the offsides run. If a goal is scored, a team can always go back and challenge. And it was just, it was a huge miss at the worst time. And I'm still pissed off at it. I mean, because who knows, if the Islanders miss the playoffs by 1 point, we can be looking at this as one of the reasons why. So it's just really unfortunate.
Yeah, I agree with everything that everyone here is saying. I think, Greeny, you provided a lot of important context on the relationship between Toronto and the on-ice official. And Patrick Waugh said it best in his presser. If Toronto isn't going to have the ability to overrule the on-ice official, then we need to get rid of Toronto. It makes no sense to have an entire room of people with every single angle available to them advising the on-ice official as to what the call is, and then for that on-ice official to still have final say. In no world does that make sense. And you can sort of tell based on how the ref made the call, and the referee, for those listening, Michael Markovic, something along those lines. He goes out there, does not give any explanation, and as he's starting his sentence to announce that the call on the ice stands, that there is no goal, his voice cracks. So this is a guy who, you have to imagine, Toronto disagreed with the call, because why be nervous for a situation like that? You made the call, you're going to make it stand. You have an Islanders home crowd, capacity probably 40%. What's there to be nervous about? And the guy's voice is cracking and he doesn't give an explanation. So, to be honest, it's a load of crap. On the play itself, Palmieri skates, I don't even think, enter the crease. His ass does, but the contact is initiated by Merzlikins. Both arms, both the blocker side and the glove side, give Palmieri a push. He has sufficient enough time to reset himself. And in these situations, there needs to be some sort of gray area. It can't be black or white, contact, no goal. If the contact is initiated by the goalie, borderline, then it shouldn't matter. It really shouldn't. And it looks like the way that this is trending is akin to how the NFL handles roughing the passer, where any sort of contact on the quarterback, whether it's immediately after he releases, whether it's a defensive lineman putting full weight on the quarterback, following through a tackle, whatever it is, it's going to get called roughing the passer. And that's apparently the world that we're living in right now with goaltender interference. And to make another football analogy, it's sort of like when the NFL allowed review of pass interference, where the call on the field was almost never overturned. So what's the point? Just let it stand and let's keep playing. But well, also, for a guy to wave off a play like that so quickly, egregious.
Well, what other sport will an official on the field or court or anything go into a replay booth, consult with someone else, and then be able to make the final say?
Soccer. But
is that true? I don't know how that works.
Using the dumbest sport as a floor.
As I get to my point, well, Ethan fires off his feelings. So the thing with soccer that's difficult is, like, every league kind of can have its own rule. Like the Italian league could be different than England and so on and so forth. But typically, I believe what it is they have VAR, which is the replay, and they get buzzed, like, we want you to look at the VAR. And then the ref goes and looks at the screen, kind of gets consulted, can talk it over, and then he makes the final decision. But it's just kind of like a little different because the way the sport is refereed, and it's not necessarily a contact sport in the same way where you're going to have those bumps and those sort of things.
Soccer is not a contact sport.
And it's getting to the point where, like, we're going to get to the point where just don't let the guys in the crease at this point. Like, if you're going to call it every time a player's in the crease or bumps the goalie in the crease, maybe we'll just start becoming lacrosse and you're just not allowed in the crease at all as a skater.
Well, then,
like,
the
is that just the goalie's room at this point?
Then can every goalie, the crease? Every goalie should now start trying to initiate contact if there's something in front of the net.
Greeny, that's what everyone's saying now. And it's honestly going to become one of these things where we're going to see a goalie pull a stupid move and try to like throw his elbow out and hit a skater and let the puck go past him. And then they're going to stop doing that. But
it's like flopping in the NBA.
Yeah.
I think that's where we're heading.
It's affecting the game, right? Like, you guys know from watching football every Sunday, like, when you see these flags, it's annoying. Like, it ruins the quality of the game. And that's, like, last night was a microcosm of that in the NHL, where that goal should just be a goal. Like,
well,
why
on,
is that
Jack.
Not a goal in
Rocky,
today's
NHL? You bring up a good point, because it's all subjective. There are plenty of NFL games where the refs just swallow their flags and the announcer's like, oh, guess they're letting them play tonight.
But it also depends on who it is. Like, the goalie, like you said before, the goalie's sort of like the quarterback. Like, you can't touch him at all. You can't touch him at all. But, like, there's certain plays where, like, you can't help but touch them.
Right.
You're like Palmieri last night, like, he's just getting to a spot. That's how I felt. He was just getting to a spot, and then he kind of got bumped, went a foot or two in front of the crease, and then made a beautiful deflection. And then it gets taken away because he bumped him 3 or 4 seconds earlier.
I think that's also the part that is not getting discussed enough. Even if the guy was hit, which you could debate if it was, you know, legitimate contact or not, there was ample time for him to reset. And
that
then
was wildly out of position.
Exactly.
That context matters.
He was moving right and the puck deflected left. He was not stopping the puck.
And that's the same point Wah was making on the Montreal goal, right? Where Sorokin was sort of going in the wrong direction, but he still got hit, right? It still affected his ability to turn around and try to make a save. He probably wouldn't have had that line A bullet anyway, but it was like, there is an argument to be made. What's the difference between that one and this one? Because if you go back and look at both, I actually think the Montreal one was much worse as far as contact and affecting the goalie's ability to move.
Let me ask you guys this, because I thought about this after the game ended. So let's say that shot from Romanov was tipped and it didn't go in the net. He deflected it out of play or it missed the net, whatever. Would there have been a penalty on that play for goalie interference?
Never in a
no
million
shot. No.
Years.
So what are we doing? What the hell are we doing? Because
my question too. When you're asking, like, what are we doing? Like, I don't remember 5 years ago this being a thing. And honestly, I was thinking about it. Why do we have challenges? Why doesn't the NHL just do their due diligence and make sure that plays are onside when they can review it, hire a few extra guys, make sure you get it right after every goal. You should know if it's offside seconds before the puck even goes in, call the officials and have them overturn the play. Like, it's just egregious. Like, this, the amount of goaltender interference conversations that have had to be had this season. I don't remember it ever being like this, and we're doing too much. I don't know why it's like this. I'm honestly confused. When did it get like this?
Speaking of, Jack, do we all also remember how long the Blue Jackets were given?
Oh, that drives me nuts.
Decide about challenging last
night?
That
drives me nuts.
That was insane. They were like having a full-on conversation. Like, when you go to a referee goes to the bench, it should literally be yes or no. We're challenging or we're not challenging. They're having like a full-on back and forth conversation. And even, you know, it's bad when the booth mentions it. Like, Goring and Burke were kind of like, all right, like, let's get the game moving. Like, the whole point of this is you get your 10 seconds or whatever, and then we get the game back to moving. It was like a good 30 seconds where they're looking at the monitor, talking amongst the team, deciding whether to challenge. They didn't end up winning the challenge, but that was another aspect of the game that I think is now forgotten because of how it ended with the Palmieri stuff. But just ridiculous. Like, literally have a clock. Have, like, they have a shot clock in basketball. They have a pitch clock in baseball now. This, after the goal, there should literally be a clock that's just like 20 seconds or whatever. And once that's up, you can no longer challenge. Because again, it's subjective. Like, if Wes McCauley's reffing, you get 20 minutes to decide. If this other guy's reffing, you get 10 seconds. It makes no sense.
There should also be a clock for when the officials are looking at a replay, so they're not there for 5 minutes. It's like you get the officials Agreed. Have 90 seconds. If after 90 seconds they can't find something conclusive, they have to go with the call.
To my point on why I think that there was a disagreement between Toronto and the on-ice official, because it took forever.
Exactly. But it's like, if there's a disagreement, like Toronto is clearly seeing something that the on-ice official did not see.
Why is that?
So what I was just going to say, like, if Toronto is seeing something that the on-ice official can't see, why is the on-ice official not going to defer to the guy that has a million screens in front of him and can see every single angle?
And an entire team of people.
I can't get over that because it doesn't make any logical sense.
I don't understand why, like, maybe this is kind of like a ignorant question. But why is the audio between the situation room and the referee, why isn't that released?
This should be released. That's a good point.
Great point.
Why isn't that released?
Yeah. Like, it should be. I'd love to hear the conversation. And also, I'm sure this is probably cathartic bitching for those who are listening because everyone's probably furious, but we will move on to the game and individual players. Like someone just said, I forget who, it might have been you, Jack, or Greeny, but it can't just be an on-ice dictatorship where the on-ice official gets final say if multiple people in Toronto are disagreeing with them. And someone I'm sure can correct me on this. In horse racing, when there is a video review for an inquiry or a DQ, I'm pretty sure when it goes to the stewards in the box, in the video room, it's a majority rules situation. Like if there's three people and two think that there was a foul, then they call it a foul. I don't think it has to be unanimous. And again, I think that that is something that could and should be implemented.
That's a good point. The last thing that I'll say on it is I think that a lot of these refs, they're just going to go along with their partner for that game, because that's just kind of the culture that's created. Like, even if Wes McCauley saw something else, is he going to show up his partner by, like, disagreeing with him on something this egregious at that stage of the game?
No, it's going to make for an awkward dinner at Borelli's after.
Of course. So I just don't, like, I don't trust the officials enough to actually make the right call. And that's pretty much all I'll say on that.
All right. Should we move on to some individual players?
Yeah, let's do it.
Who do we want to start with?
Well, eight. You want to start with eight?
Eight.
Let's start with eight.
Eight might start an argument, so I guess we should start with eight. Let's go.
Rocco, you seem pretty eager. Why don't you kick us off with eight?
I just think I say this on the pod all the time. He's probably the most polarizing player on the team.
Easily.
And maybe Sorokin, but I feel like that's kind of gone away, but I mean,
Dobson hasn't gotten paid yet.
Yeah, that's fair too. But he's just so frustrating. Even watching the game last night, you know, you see another pinch or two, the aggression, it looks good. And it's like Jekyll and Hyde, but on each side of the blue line. Like offensively, I thought he looked pretty good. He had some aggression and whatnot. And in the defensive zone, this guy is so lost. The gap control. I mean, that goal that I believe deflected off his ankle area and past Sorokin, like that should not be a shot that even gets off. Watching this guy play defense is like watching the Rizzler play basketball. It's disgusting. Like he just doesn't have it. Like I feel like he's got no IQ in his own zone. Even the outlet passes are pretty suspect at times. He, you know, had how many goals has Greeny? What's his numbers lately? If you could pull them up, because I feel like they're pretty solid points wise.
Rocco,
we're talking about Dobson.
Yes, that's who that is indeed who wears number 8 on the New York Islanders, producer Greeny. Thank you.
Thank you.
I went back and I didn't
34 points in 59 games. I'm cutting you off just for that, Ethan.
Can you goals, 26 Greeny,
the last 10.
Can you try to check it out?
Last 10.
Give us the last 10. I'm also going to ask
since injury.
Well, okay. Last five
look
games,
at the game
which I have right here. He's been really good. Last night was his first pointless game in the last five.
So you want to hear something crazy? Go back to his last three games. His last three games, he's a -5.
Wow. And he has points.
Which is wild.
When you have points like he has and you're a minus five, and we, you know, we always say in hockey, plus minus is like a useless stat in most occasions.
Not for Noah Dobson.
You know what's but when funny? You have, but when you're a defenseman and you have that many points and you're still a dash five or whatever he is, like, I don't get it, man. And I'm so nervous to pay that. Like, I'm so nervous to see what this guy's contract looks like. We were discussing before in the group chat, like, what would we consider a win on this guy's next deal?
Well, after the Chychrun contract.
Yeah, he got 8x9. That's the ceiling, I guess we could say, right? Then he can't go over Chychrun.
No, but he's got the points production to go Chychrun level. And that's the scary thing. And as we know, the guy's asking for a lot of money. Not a contract that I feel comfortable paying. As a matter of fact, the contract that I feel comfortable paying him is $0 for 0 years. I would 100% try to move him this upcoming offseason. He's not a player I have any interest in having long-term on this team. Defensively, he's soft. And I'm sorry, I think a lot of people are going to laugh at this, but if we go back to last year before when he exploded for 70 points, the beginning of the year was brutal, and he blocked half of Isle's Twitter because the guy is soft as baby shit. And I really do think that it doesn't, I'm not going to say it translates onto the ice, but
kinda does.
You can see the mentality there. He is just soft. He is soft in his own zone. And I'm sorry, the offensive skills are not even remotely close enough to make up for it. He is not a plus skater. He is not a plus puck handler. He doesn't have an elite shot. He's not a guy that you can consistently trust to go behind the net, get the puck, and then make a nice zone entry. The only player on this roster that can actually do that comfortably is Matt Barzal. And I guess Pierre Springvall sometimes.
No, Horvat. But, Horvat's good at that.
Okay, but I'm talking about just, he doesn't have the same speed that Barzal has. Like, yeah. Defensively.
Like, and that's puck, his main skill sort of thing.
Like, puck possession, yes, Horvat's excellent. No debate there. But when it comes to Dobson, what do you do well? What do you do that's elite? And I can't focus in on one thing. I mean, the Islanders just plucked a KGB agent from the KHL, and he's been better than Noah Dobson. He's been better on the defensive end. He's a better skater. Offensively, he's better. He's trending for more points per game than Noah Dobson is so far this season. Like, why aren't we trying to trade Dobson and just give Tony a smaller contract? He's younger. I don't care. He's been in the NHL for 5 years. So it's at the point where this is a contract that makes me super nervous. The Islanders seem intent on keeping him, with the exception of an elite forward being made available in a trade, as we saw with the Elias Pettersson stuff. But it's a guy who I do not feel comfortable under any circumstances. I don't want it. None.
Ethan, quickly, because I was wondering this to myself before, because I think we feel similarly on Dobson. But if you are to trade Dobson, let's say it's for a forward, whosever name you want to put there, whatever. But if you trade Dobson, are you then comfortable kind of working with the rest of this group as far as the D core?
Absolutely not. I mean, we know that there are changes.
It's a
coming.
Mess. Like, the D is scary.
It is a mess. That is the second scariest part. No, I'll say this. The number one scary part of parting with Noah Dobson is just how bad everyone else is. Ryan Pulock has become unplayable, a traffic cone. They won't play Scott Perunovic. Tony, I think, has been overall their best defenseman.
26 minutes last night.
What's that saying
Mayfield
about this
either.
Group?
Mayfield, yeah. Who they have for 5 more years.
They're just trying to get him to waive, I think.
I agree.
I 100% think so, too. But it's one of these – I'm sorry to cut you off, Jack. I know you're supposed to go. But it's just like when you look at how you would hammer out the pairs, like, I just don't see them not re-signing Dobson because you try to go through – I was going through earlier in my head, like, all right, Dobson, Pelech, Romanov, and if you sign D'Angelo, they have a nice chemistry going there, so that could be it. And then maybe you keep Riley and you put the side between Pulock and Mayfield, whoever waves. But if you take Dobson out of that equation, the D pairs become very odd.
Realistically, what you have to do is re-sign Tony. You re-sign Tony and you pair him with Romanov, okay. I think we live in a world where we're so used to the Islanders having such a lack of offensive talent. That is where we need to focus the energy and the money this offseason. If you improve the forward group to an extent that you can make up for the lack of defense, right? Like, you're paying your goalie $8.5 million a year for a reason. If you sign Tony, you pair him with Romanov. I hate it, but you keep Pelech, and then you just go out there in free agency and you just see what sticks.
You're maybe forgetting about Mike Riley. A hockey
trade.
I mentioned Riley, but
he's a third pair guy. It's like, he's scary hours.
I would,
for the
I would
defense.
Honestly give Riley and D'Angelo the 1 year specials, yep. Both of them.
I think Tony's going to get
paid,
you know, not paid, but
what's paid? What's like when you're like, I think Tony's going to get, like, what number are you thinking in your head? Because I'm thinking
based on what
he's like a 1.25.
He's getting 3 or 4, okay, but, I think.
Yeah. Dude, no. Riley got Riley got
1.25.
Riley got 1.25. Tony is 5 times better than him.
Yeah, but Tony has triple the baggage.
Not after this season, he doesn't.
No, I don't think so. I mean,
I easily see Tony.
He's been a very good soldier. He's kept his mouth shut.
No, yeah, but again, it's like he's kept his mouth shut. Then when he gets paid, guys find their mouths again.
Maybe, or maybe he's matured and doesn't want to go back to Russia.
Maybe he sees Jack out there in the stands and knows he's got his boy.
Or he knows that Lou is waiting to send him back to the gulag.
Yeah, certainly an option. All right, done with 8.
I will, Nablee, let me say one thing about 8.
Go ahead.
I think it's funny because I don't feel the same way as you guys. I'm definitely not his biggest fan, but I think the worst play he might have made throughout this entire last week was actually in overtime last night when the Blue Jackets had
that was atrocious.
Three guys on the ice for like 2 minutes, and Dobson pulled Elaine Hudson against the Islanders when he just like made a stupid play trying to make something happen when nothing was there, and it's overtime and puck possession is so critical. But I will say, I don't know what happens to the goalies when Dobson is on the ice. All of his mistakes that happen in a game end up in the back of our net. You can shake your head, but dude, did you see that second goal? That is the flukiest bounce ever.
But that shouldn't have even been a shot on goal.
Exactly.
Yeah, it should never have gotten to that
I said this in the group chat, Jack. Luck is when preparation meets opportunity. And if Noah Dobson is getting consistently unlucky, he is not meeting the moment. He needs to man up. He needs to hit people. He needs to get sticks in the lane. And he's not doing that. There's always a hesitation to his game defensively that's furious. And it's, I can't watch it anymore.
Here's what I think with him. I think the 70 points was an extremely lucky season.
I agree.
I think this year is an extremely unlucky season. I think it's somewhere in the middle. And I don't think he's great at anything, but I think he's good. Like, I think he's in the middle somewhere of all of this. His next contract is definitely a bit of a scary thought. I mean, I don't want to pay the guy. I don't want the Islanders to pay the guy $9 million per year. So
before we move on from Dobson, we don't have to go years, but what AAV would you be not ecstatic with, but what would you be like, okay with that? That's fair. That's market value. What number? Just give me a number.
Ironically, his jersey number, I think, is probably what I would that's the highest number that I would feel comfortable at. Like, anything above that, like, we're pushing it, dude.
Well, we have to keep in mind when I say market value, like, we could dislike him, whatever else, but you got to keep in mind, like, what other teams would be willing to pay this guy, because he is offer sheet eligible.
Let someone offer.
No, I'm just saying.
You say that, but we don't have that many young. We don't have a young defenseman like
not
him.
Right-handed either.
And they're not easy to find. Like,
we don't have that many young forwards either, or at least we didn't.
No,
until
we don't
this
have
year.
Either. But it's just with a team we complain about getting old. Trading your young, I guess he's the same age as Romanov, right? Trading one of your two D-men on the younger side would be a little bit tough if there was no replacement coming in. So
yeah, but what are you getting for him though?
In a trade?
Yeah.
No, yeah.
Whatever you're getting for him is going to outweigh his production, in my opinion.
You think, but we don't know. We don't know who would be available. We don't know if Van will come back to the table in regards to the EP stuff. But as far as just a number, I'm kind of right there with Jack. Like, I'd prefer 6 or 7, but if it was 8, I wouldn't be furious. That's all I'll say.
Ryan Pulock getting, what is Ryan Pulock's deal?
6.15.
I mean, Dobson's going to blow that out of the water. No,
can
thank
we
you.
Can we talk about Ryan Pulock briefly?
Yeah.
Ryan Pulock has become, he has morphed into Scott Mayfield. He has completely formed into Scott Mayfield. I have absolutely no idea. This guy can't, he was never a good skater. He is probably the slowest person on the team. I would love to see a Scott Mayfield, Matt Martin, Ryan Pulock foot race. He is, it's atrocious. And he should have won the game last night in overtime. That kind of gets glossed over. He faked out the goalie, had him dead to rights, and then in classic Ryan Pulock fashion, could not get the puck off the ice and shot it right into the goalie's pad.
Hate to burst everyone's bubble, but of Pelican Pulock, Pulock's the one who's going to be back next year.
I know.
So buckle
up. That is like, that's,
I think they both might be back personally.
I don't think so. I think Pelock's modified.
I think Mayfield's out.
I think Mayfield's out for sure, but Pelock's modified kicks in and Pulock's does not. And so Pelock is going to be easier to move. And any guesses on how many goals Adam Pelock has this year?
Zero.
Zero. That's correct. That is mind-blowing to me.
Is that good?
It's not good. So the whole defense needs to be rebuilt. I'm sorry to say.
Well, we actually have a defenseman that is a really good right winger as well that should get noted. Adam Boqvist had two assists last night. And a lot of the questions that we got were about elite right winger Adam Boqvist. So what are our thoughts there on that decision to not call anyone up, play him on the wing? And what did you guys think?
I think I was really not happy with it. I was thinking, like, why don't we just call someone up? Started looking through our entire depth chart. I was thinking, God, I think I'd even take a game of watching number 12 Liam Foudy instead of having a defenseman go on right wing. So I also was looking at Julian Gauthier. Apparently he's been injured forever. And yeah, that's why Patrick Waugh coaches the team and I don't, because he pushed the right button there.
I thought a different number 12 was coming out of your mouth, Jack.
Me too. I don't know if you'd be able to stand the sight of someone else rocking number 12. Great call. Great call by Patrick Waugh. I think part of the factor is, I believe Bridgeport played back-to-back games over the weekend. Factor that into the decision. But if Boqvist is going to be third line right wing due to a team illness, what does that say about Matt Martin? That man is here for recruiting purposes and recruiting purposes only. I don't know what else to say. Great game from Boqvist. He played really well. He was noticeable. Two assists. And it's good when you have a guy with a first-round pedigree who was waived pending RFA, and he is willing to do whatever it takes to help his team win. That's grit. That's determination. That's Islander hockey, and we love to see it.
They were, by the way, Bridgeport was in Hershey. They had 2 days off. They're playing in Hershey tomorrow. So I guess it's not that far of a drive, but Boqvist is better than Hudson Fashing. That's all I got to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was kind of similar to Jack there pregame, where I was saying, why not call up Jeffries? Why not give a guy a shot forward, whatever? Quickly ate my words. Boqvist was good. He's talented. He's offensively talented.
Let's finish up with the bad before we get into more of the good. Anthony Duclair.
Oof.
Yeah. So this will tie into my criticism of Patrick Waugh. I know, shock, with his choice of shootout lineups. So Anthony Duclair, a lifetime, I don't know if this includes last night, it probably doesn't, 4-for-21, now probably 4-for-22 in shootouts. The second that he sent Duclair out to take the first shot, I turned to my buddy Daryl, who I was at the game with, and I go, Duclair hasn't handled a puck clean all game. Literally all game, I don't think he was able to receive a pass cleanly on his stick, and to no one's surprise, loses the puck coming in on the shootout. I do not understand the logic behind the shootout decisions. Me personally, in no particular order, I would have sent out Siplikov, I would have sent out Holmstrom, and I would have sent out Horvat. So of the three that he sent out, only Horvat was there. Why Holmstrom wasn't in the top three is probably the most egregious decision that Wah made all game. I don't get it. We've seen Holmstrom do very well in the shootout before. He's got a nasty shot, as we saw in the power play a couple games ago. He's got pretty good hands. To me, I don't understand the decision. Back to Duclair, I do feel bad for the guy. It's clear he's not playing at 100%. It looks like he's playing closer to 50%. We also have to keep in mind that this is a guy who's here on a, what, $3.5 million a year contract. So, listen, he's not a high-paid guy. He's a guy that historically has succeeded when he's had talent around him. And this is sort of a perfect storm where a lot of your top guys are out. They just traded Nelson. Barzell's out for the year. And he's not a guy who can drive play on a line. He's a guy who will succeed when you put him with talent. And the Islanders do not have a lot of talent right now. So between his groin and the fact that the roster is depleted, I think we're seeing a lot of weaknesses come out that we didn't plan to see when we were all ecstatic for that contract. So I'm hoping that regardless of how this season ends, he gets healthy in the offseason, everyone gets healthy in the offseason, and we see a much different Tony Duclair come October.
Well said on Duclair. I mean, really just the icing on the cake with the shootout last night, but I haven't seen it from him all season. Even some of the goals he scored, like he scored against Montreal last week on the power play. I would really like him not to even be on the power play. And he scored what we would call a Mickey goal. Like the goalie should have had that. It wasn't a great shot. Everyone else did all the work. I don't know. When you give Siplikov some time and space, he looks really good. So I would like for him to get that opportunity.
Okay. Yeah. But we agreed in the group chat last week, Jack, our main criticism, or at least my only criticism, was fourth line Siplikov, and that line cooks.
Yeah. It's nice to have a good fourth line now. So I was wrong on that as well. Got to give Wah credit. I don't know if that's what he thought was going to happen, but wow, it is completely, it's completely changed our fourth line. Like now when you see Gatcombe, McLean, Siplikov come on, you actually think something good is going to happen. And they scored two goals the other day against Calgary, and I didn't look it up, but I was curious, like, when was the last time our fourth line chipped in with two goals and also two big goals, like giving us the lead in the last 3 minutes of the game? So I thought that was cool. And one last player to touch on, unless you guys have anything else on Duclair.
Yeah, I just thought Ethan calling him Tony D was interesting because he's not exactly dancing on him.
He's not. He's when we say dancing on him,
that is interesting.
That's not the Tony D we're talking about.
We do have two Tony D's. On him. Tony D squared.
That's a good find there. But with this team and like with the roster they currently have, like it's okay. Like we know we're not going to win every game, and I think we could all admit we're kind of lucky to even be in a spot where they could still make the playoffs. But if we're going to lose games, I would rather it be because of the guys on the ice that shouldn't be in these situations because of the roster construction. But when you have a player like JG Pageau turning the puck over, leading Brandon Gallagher on a breakaway, I mean, it's the nicest pass he's had all week, springs him on a breakaway, Gallagher ties the game, the Islanders end up winning it in overtime. I'm sure Pageau was relieved about that one. And then against Calgary, we're up 3-2. We have a D-zone draw. You have your backup goalie in net. Like your job is to win the faceoff. Not only does he lose it, he loses it so clean. They get it right back to the point and they score. And it's like, dude, this is what you're supposed to be good at. This is why you're still here and you're getting traded in the summer. You're supposed to close out these games now so we trade you later. At least do your fucking job. So I'm annoyed with Pageau now, and he better rebound this week.
I have to defend Pageau slightly at the end of the game. He won like three faceoffs in a row and they had two meaningless icings and decide to randomly throw the puck down the ice for no reason, which led directly to the tying goal. Like Pageau was out there and won, I think it was like three faceoffs in a row against Sean Monahan.
You know what,
I know it didn't feel like it.
He gets paid $5 million a year not to score goals, not to get assists, to win faceoffs and defend. And
no, you're right. No, you're right. But yeah, like that just annoyed me at the end of the game because they managed that last 7 or 8 minutes in the third period so poorly. Like they had the puck numerous times and they just made low percentage plays. And it was only a matter of time until Columbus tied that game. But you are right, Pageau. We need more from Pageau.
And it's frustrating too because he scores a goal every once in a while, but when you really, really watch the games, he's so bad in the offensive zone. I mean, I think he's the worst passer on the team.
He throws grenade
after grenade after grenade. And, you know, I got my friend texting me like, oh, well, like, they got deflected. They weren't his fault. It wasn't his fault on the – like, this guy is constantly defended by Isles fans. I'm sorry, but a big part of passing the puck is timing. If he waits too long on a two-on-one, yeah, it's going to get knocked down because he didn't choose the right time to make the pass. I think they had two consecutive two-on-ones with Pageau, and he messed up both of them by not shooting and attempting to make a pass, and it gets intercepted or just deflected into the corner. Like, you got to get something off on a two-on-one. Just shoot it or make sure you're getting the pass across. And then you get the second chance and you do the same exact thing. It's so frustrating. And I know he's good on face-offs and he's good, but in my opinion, not as good as they say on defense. During those Eastern Conference Finals runs, yes, shutdown guy, matched up against one season on other teams, did a great job. In the years since, in a flat cap era, when he's making $5 million per, I don't think he's been that great for the last couple of years.
And no, and he's gone and he knows it.
He's gone. But, and you know what? You give it to him too. He's been a good soldier, but the bottom line is it's time with Pageau. It's time. And we sort of have the in-house replacement waiting in the wings.
We
Patrice
do.
Bergeron 2.0.
Patrice Bergeron. Frank Saravalli in the latest jerk sesh on Twitter. It's unbelievable. This guy. Once a day.
I feel like he hates the Isles, and then yeah. Richie came across, and now he's the best thing ever.
Once a day, he's talking about.
He might mush him. I'm getting nervous.
Yeah. All right. We've done a lot of negative. Bojack Horseman. Come on, workshop with me. Riff with me here. But Bojack.
What was that old cartoon Bojack Horseman or whatever?
Yeah, Bojack Horseman. Yeah, Netflix.
Never watched.
Yeah, definitely.
Very overrated show. But Bojack Horseman. I don't know. There's something there. Someone in the replies is going to figure it out for us.
The slut bucket. Shout out to Offside Tapper.
Yeah. Again, man, it's like the year that we traded for him when Barzal goes down and he just wills this team into the playoffs. He's good at everything. He really is. And I know a lot of folks probably look at the lineup and especially how we started the year running Barzal on the wing with Horvat. But man, is it abundantly clear now, given Pageau's on his way out because Richie's on his way up, given the Gleb-Veremyev signing and Cizikas getting old, we're sort of looking next year, Barzal and Horvat being 1C-2C or vice versa. I don't really care. But Bo can carry a line, and Barzal should be able to carry a line. And as long as they're surrounded by enough talent, that's going to make for a really nice top six. And you do need, I feel like we've discussed this either on the podcast or in private, but the best teams and the most competitive teams have two excellent top six centers. I know it's ironic because the Islanders had three excellent top six centers for the last 2.5 years, and it didn't get them anywhere. But you do need really elite center play, and the Islanders very clearly have that in Barzal and Horvat.
Boy, shame the deadline's passed. Can't trade him to a contender.
Yeah, always a shame. Any comments on Horvat?
Yeah, he's all around great player. Love him, captain type guy. Just not enough good things. You know, there's just so many good things I could say about him.
He really should get the C once Lee's gone.
Once Lee's gone, but I'm going to say this now. I'm sort of sick of the narrative of rip it off Lee, give it to Horvat. Like, people got to stop with that. Like, that doesn't happen that often in locker rooms. And when it does, it's typically not good for the room. And no. Lee's been here a while. And clearly, Lee's a good leader. And Lee's having his best year in the last 5 or 6. So,
yeah.
And if they're going to give it off Lee.
If they're going to give the C to anyone, I think it should be Kyle Palmieri after he was ready to murder the officials last night. I mean, I loved that from him. He was
who had Jack trying to name Palmieri the captain ahead of me.
Not on my bingo card. Yeah. I will say on Lee though, I know we've as the kids say, we've glazed him a lot this year,
Deserves
but
it.
he deserves it absolutely, and it's abundantly clear that he is at least going to finish out his contract next year. He'll be here, and we just have to hope that he doesn't fall off too hard. But coming back from that ACL injury, that next season, he very obviously wasn't at 100%. We've touched on the Adam Oates camp, but last night, being there and watching him in person for the first time in probably a month, there were numerous times where he just out-battled two guys at the same time.
He's
just
a beast.
On the boards, using his butt. And that wasn't there off the ACL. It wasn't. I mean,
it was there prior.
The skating has certainly improved somehow, but the use of the body is great to see. Because I remember when he got that extension and we were, all right, this guy's going to be here until he's 36, 37, however old. I'm okay giving that kind of term to a player of his style, because they can age gracefully. Not to make an outrageous comparison, but I'm going to make an outrageous comparison just in terms of play style as they age. But a guy who was really good at using his body and positioning to score goals and put up a ton of points in his later years was Jaromir Jagr. And a guy like Lee, I think he can do that. Maybe obviously not to that extent, just stylistically, I think that that's there. And I saw that a bunch against Columbus. So let's hope that that continues.
Yeah. And if we're getting the crystal ball out, I mean, next year's the last year of his deal. If everything goes well, maybe he takes a sweetheart deal after that and you keep him around. You know what I mean? He's that type of guy. He's got his bag already. So if the future goes that way, I won't be upset. And, you know, you got to give a guy credit, because a guy making that much money, a guy with only a couple years left, like they're professional athletes. They should always be giving maximum effort and going for it. But, you know, he changed something this offseason that clearly worked, right, in Adam Oates. And it's the timing and it's the little things that players work on with Adam Oates. Horvat actually works with him as well. I wonder if that was a little bit of a connection there to get Lee. But
didn't know that.
Yeah, Horvat definitely is one of the most noted guys that works with him, I believe. But he, you know, he's made changes, and you got to give a guy credit, because as Ethan said, it's sort of like, not entirely, but a bit of a style change, in that he wanted, I think he looks a little like, I don't know for a fact that he's lighter, but he looks lighter the way he moves. You know, maybe he changed the regimen, whatever else, but clearly it's working. And as we've been saying, yes, we've been glazing him all year, but he deserves it. As does Horvat, as does a couple other guys, one named Ilya Sorokin. But, you know, there's a few guys that I believe Ethan had a tweet. Holmstrom, Horvat, and who was the other one that was carrying them to a playoff spot?
Tony D.
Tony D. And I threw Sorokin in there myself. So there's definitely a couple of guys that deserve their credit here.
And Patrick Waugh.
And Patrick Waugh. What else is on the agenda?
Well, I do have a couple of stats.
To the green room.
If you guys fancy it. All right.
Yeah, go for it.
Let's start with the ultimate rare ref stat. So this is, I am just simply saying this stat out of spite because I'm still upset. This is a spite stat in the green room, the ref edition. So Ethan mentioned before the official who screwed the Islanders last night, his name was Michael Markovic. So great, great website called Scouting the Refs will tell you who is going to shaft the Islanders on that night, so you can see who's working the game. And I looked back, it has like their record over the last couple of years. So this guy over the last three seasons has worked a bunch of Islander games. The Islanders are 3-7-1. Make it now 3-7-2 after last night with this guy working their games. Probably means nothing, but maybe it does mean something. I don't know. They were 2-0 this year with this guy until last night. But that's a spite ref stat. I'm going to lose my mind the next time I see him officiating an Islander game. Anyway, on to more positive stats. So last night, I guess it's not technically a positive stat since they lost, but the Islanders' record when they have the lead after two periods this year is 23-2-3. And last night was the first time in their last 18 games after having a lead after two that they lost. I know that was something that they really struggled with early in the year, blowing all those leads, but it's encouraging that they corrected it. Now, I teased before I did have a shootout stat. So the Islanders somehow this year are 2-2 in shootouts. This was their first shootout since November 19th when they lost to Calgary. Ilya Sorokin in his career is 7-14 now in shootouts. The Islanders overall, 6-19 in their last 25 shootouts.
I'm curious if you can pull this when maybe when we're doing questions, but what was Ilya's record again?
He's 7-14 in his career.
I'm curious how many goals, the shootout goals, the Islanders have scored on average in those games.
I was actually trying to look that up. It's kind of a hard stat to find, but I'll do some digging.
Okay.
All right, a couple more. So we talked about Pierre Engvall, who's picked up his play as of late. This is kind of a weird stat. So last night he scored his 63rd career goal. They've come in 63 games, which matches the third highest total in NHL history without having a multi-goal game.
He's never had a multi-goal game?
Nope. 63 goals in 63 separate games.
Why is that surprising?
Because you feel like you can run into an empty net goal. If you're feeling it, you're having a good night, you can get something. And especially when he was playing in the top six for them last year, he had opportunities.
Sure. Yeah, Brock is scoring all those goals.
Whatever. You know what? There's an interesting stat. I think it's
tough to score two goals in a game when you only play 2 months out of the season.
That's true. If he was more like Wintervall or Fallvall, then yeah.
Pierre Engvall.
There you go. I like that.
There you go.
All right. Last couple. Adam Boqvist, shout out. He is now 2 goals, 5 assists, 7 points in 13 games with the Islanders, both defense and forward edition. So shout out to him. And then looking forward, the results actually tonight, we're recording on obviously Tuesday night. The results all seemingly went the Islanders' way tonight. Montreal lost, Ottawa lost. The Rangers are playing right now in LA. But this basically adds up to a huge game tomorrow night for the Islanders. They are at home once again against Vancouver. It's the final game of their homestand. The Islanders last faced Vancouver back in November. They beat them 5-2, and they've had success with Vancouver in the past. They're 9-3-4 in their last 16 games against Vancouver, except Vancouver has won all three games at UBS Arena, and they have not lost to the Islanders in New York since the Isles beat them 5-2 back in 2018 at the Barclays Center, which is Barry Trotz's first year with the team, for some context. Wild. Yeah, so let's try and change the narrative and get a win and then go into a playoff spot tomorrow night.
That would be fun.
That would be fun. And that closes the door on the green room.
Before we get to questions, real quick, one thing I want to say, because I'm still thinking about the call from last night. I'm a big don't blame the refs guy in the big picture. There's 82 games. You have plenty of opportunities where the ref isn't screwing you, or maybe the ref is screwing your opponent, or something is going on. You have your opportunities. They're, right? It's not as severe when the referee screws up in the NBA or the NHL or even MLB. NFL is different just because there are far fewer games and the games matter much more. This is a play and a call that I think every Islanders fan is going to look back on if they miss by a point. That there are plenty of bad calls throughout the course of a season where in the moment everyone's bitching and complaining about it and we rarely revisit it. Really, the only bad calls that I'll consistently think back to are in the Carolina series. I know we talked about the Mayfield high stick, but this is a call that we're going to look back on. This is really bad. So I just wanted to say that.
And actually, on that note, Jack, you were going at some Sabres fans. I need to bring this up because this has been bothering me. For some reason, this got to like the Sabres online community, and they are pissed off at a play that happened 2 years ago where they claim that Hudson Fashing kicked a puck in a net in a game in March that prevented Buffalo from making the playoffs. I don't understand what is going on, Jack.
It's unhealthy.
It's psychotic.
It's not healthy.
I mean, like, it's he also didn't kick it in.
He didn't kick it in.
I mean, like, I saw that, and Jack, like, credit to you because you were just going, you were just going at them. Seriously, get a grip, Buffalo. Give me a break.
They had so many chances down the stretch that season too, and that game was on March 7th. Like, listen, last night happened, and it sucks. But this team still has everything in front of them. With Montreal losing tonight, especially, they have nobody but to blame other than themselves. Like, honestly, when I think of this season, I think of the games that they lost because of themselves, not because of that game last night. Like, one game that I always think of, it was early in the season, and we had a lead on Detroit on the road in the third period, and they scored twice. And I remember they scored, like, in the last minute. And I was thinking, like, God, I don't know if they were doing this last year, but this one might come back to haunt us. And that game, for some reason, that particular one's been in my head because they didn't even get the loser point that night. But, yeah, I mean, let's get on to the questions.
All right. So, once again, thank you, everybody, for submitting the questions. We got some good ones. So, this one is going to be from Mr. 305. He first says, I guess sarcastically, what is goalie interference? We have no idea. But his actual question is Tony D a must re-sign right now at the right price and years?
Jack. 100%. I mean, I'm not, you guys know I'm not the math guy, but how many assists are we pacing for over an 82-game season from Tony D'Angelo?
You're not the math guy. You're the Tony D guy, though.
That is true. So I think he has at least, I think he has 12. I think last night was his 12th. I mean, what we're used to from our defensemen, this is incredible. Other than Dobson, I don't remember a defenseman constantly putting up these kind of numbers. And D'Angelo led defensemen in time on ice last night with 26 minutes. Like,
yeah, he's eating minutes, and Jack, he is on pace presently for 50 points.
He's fantastic, wow. This guy.
Over an 82, it would be 50 points.
Exactly.
Wow. Yeah. I mean,
and look, the guy's coming in, he's fresh because he's playing, but KHL, as we know, is a much different game than the NHL. Guy comes over, he's pacing at 50 points.
And this is what happens.
And
this
defense, is what happens when defense hasn't been that bad lately. Is it fair to say that?
He's been fine.
He's been holding his own, I would
he's
say.
He's a better, he's not, exceeding he's my expectations.
Guy, but
he's exceeding my expectations on the defensive side of the puck.
He's a better defenseman than Noah Dobson, and he's like 3 feet tall.
Well, you know what it is about Tony D? His best version of defense is his offense, right? It's his outlet pass that gets 100%. Him out of trouble. If you have that in your bag, it gets you out of trouble.
Tony D's never seen a two-line pass he didn't like.
Oh, if the two-line pass still existed in this league, Tony D would not exist in this league.
It's a really fun skill set to watch. And just one point, like, this is what happens when a player with a past with behavioral stuff comes and plays under Lou Lamoriello. They know their bullshit is not going to be tolerated. And this guy has been nothing but a breath of fresh air for this team. So definitely re-sign him. He takes a load off of Dobson. Yeah, I mean, I wonder what the argument is for not re-signing him. I know he isn't great defensively, but
I think it's just money.
If the money goes too high.
Yeah, we'll see. I just don't know.
I don't see so many teams knocking down the door to sign him. That's my one thing. So I just don't see him getting it. And the cap's going up, so I may be wrong, but I don't see it going over two. I think it could be just like a nice one-year deal, $2 million. You know, we helped you out. You help us out now. And then after that, you get whatever you can.
We'll see what the market is.
Yeah. I mean, one D-man came off the market, so there's not too many.
It's true. I also want to shout out for Tony D, and this is really, really pathetic, but like seeing the puck rim around the boards and knowing that Tony D's not going to fumble the puck at the blue line and like actually be able to hold the puck in is so comforting, because every other defenseman, I feel like, if the puck comes to them, it's like a hand grenade and they just cannot hang on to the puck. I know it's a very low bar, but just wanted to throw that out there. All right, next question. This is, Oh, I just had it. Okay, here we go. This is from Joe Mama, our guy Joe Mama at XX Plane B. Should Pulak sit for Boqvist for an extended period of time? Love Pulak, but he's been pissing me off.
I mean,
I'm not against that.
I wouldn't take out my, you know, you can't switch your third line winger and your bottom pair defenseman. So I think they're both going to play.
No, but in all seriousness, if Fashion comes back.
I don't think Pulak's going to be a guy that gets taken out.
And if, I don't understand or not, why Perunovic isn't getting any run.
That was another question.
You don't understand why?
No, I don't.
Well, he would have to go in over. Who are the left-handed guys right now? It's Riley Romanov, Pelik. So who are you putting Peru
in? Can I be honest? I don't think it matters. Like, we've seen plenty of guys succeed on their offside. And
so you're taking out Pulak for Peru?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Give it a shot.
I mean, if they're sitting Scott Mayfield, I think anything's on the table at this point.
No, yeah, I agree. But I just think Pulak's seen differently than Scott.
He is. It's frustrating. It was frustrating to me seeing him get the A.
Yeah, and I don't think the A means that much in regards to whether they'll consider moving him or not, though.
It sucks that he got that.
I don't think it's that big of a deal.
It pisses me off.
Maybe it was a farewell gift.
He's not with that no trade clause.
No.
All right. Next question here. This is from Sippy at Joe B. Isles. True or false? Isles are making the playoffs.
Jack, youngest to oldest.
I'm going to go true.
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 Are we all believing?
False.
There we go. There comes the level.
Older statesman. False.
Yeah. I mean, I think it really comes down to, can this team scratch out a point or two this weekend when they go to Tampa and when they go to Carolina? They just have to find a way to not come out empty from those two. And I think they're going to they're just going to go all in on that first game. Like,
I wanted to ask you guys, what, probably no one knows this offhand, but what's the expected points total for that eighth seed? Like, what do we think the cutoff is now? Because it's probably lower than it has been in a while. Low 90? So, like a 90, 92 gets you in?
Let me get out my trusty calculator for you.
And while you're doing that, it really is a vibes thing. Every time I take a look at the schedule, I say no way. And then on an off night, like tonight, I look at the scoreboard and no one wants it.
88 points.
No, you're
points.
So right. What are the
88 points?
That's insane. Stupid. We've had years where you've almost had to touch 100. 100. To get in.
Yeah.
88 probably gets you in. That's insane.
We can't have a player false, tournament.
I want to say too, when I say false, I'm not hoping it's false. It's just me trying to be logical that I think false. Because the schedule does get, like, Ethan made a great point. Like, you look at all the out of town scores and it's, no one's taking it. But what worries me in regards to the Isles is the upcoming schedule.
Oh, me too, 100%. But when Adam Boqvist is potting two apples, logic three goes out the window.
Yeah.
I feel like they're going to win one of and potentially both of these two road games.
That's crazy. Both of them? Out of your mind.
I don't
know why.
They
win both, they're getting in.
I don't know why. I just I have like a weird feeling about it.
I'll tell you what, there's no middle ground. It's either going to be the two best games we've seen them play all year, or they're going to lose 5-1.
Another good point, friend of the program Style made to me via text the other day, is a lot of these teams, like these good teams we're going to play down the stretch, they may be locked into a seed. So that may benefit us as well, like for the last 3-4 games. I don't know who we play, but if some of these teams are locked in and can't move, they might rest some guys. Go ahead, Green.
I had the schedule here. They play Washington second to last game of the year. So they're going to have it. The game before that, they're playing New Jersey. They're probably going to be locked in unless they keep falling, but they'd be locked into that 3-2 matchup with Carolina. And then the week before that, they play Washington again at home. Both those Washington games are at UBS, by the way.
The only reason Washington wouldn't sit guys, though, is Ovi's record.
Correct.
Right.
But like, no, I also think, like, what are those games going to look like on a Washington end if, like, they're literally all just trying to feed Ovechkin at that point?
Right.
Like, I don't know if it's going to be a structured game for Washington. It's probably just going to be them screwing around trying to feed him at every possible moment.
I mean, they're not far from clinching the East, right? Like, they're like 10 points up on Florida, I think. Something like that.
They're actually, the closest team is actually Carolina. They're 13 points up on Carolina. So they're probably going to clinch the East in a couple of days, honestly.
That's wild. Who would have thought that?
Yeah.
Not us.
Because now Toronto, actually, with their win tonight, Toronto overtook Florida for first in the Atlantic.
Wow. Huge for them.
Yeah, but they'll lose in the first round. All right.
God willing.
Yeah, seriously. Last couple questions. This is from Thomas Boyle. Thomas B 74456, whatever. I screwed that up. Who is in charge of hiring these incompetent officials? Well, Thomas, I'm glad you asked, because I looked it up before. It's Stephen Walcom, Senior Vice President and Director of Officiating. So, yeah, go get his email.
I'll go look him up on LinkedIn.
Yep. He's been there for quite a while. He hires all the officials. So if anyone is upset, Stephen Walcom, go ahead. Okay, last serious question here. This is from MF Isles at MF1 Isles. Are there any contracts on this team that aren't movable aside from Engvall, I guess? I want to hear some hot takes about movable, unmovable contracts.
Ooh.
I don't think they have any unmovable contracts.
I think they did.
I think they did before the salary cap jump, right?
Yeah.
And I think they have one.
Years came off.
All right, so everyone, give me one unmovable contract.
Or closest to unmovable, because yeah, I don't think any are totally. Like, wait, I don't think there's any that you need to put a sweetener in to have someone take. If that makes sense.
The immovable, right? I agree with you, Rocco. The immovable aspect is just no trade clauses.
That was what I was going to ask. Like, is this a factor of no trade? Like, is no trade clause allowed to be a factor?
Yes.
You could decide that.
It could be. I took the premise of the question as, like, the player's bad. No one wants them.
That's how I took it.
Yeah.
Who would, if you're, okay, I'm going to kind of take this question a little bit, but if you're a GM of another team and you had to pick one with their current contract, are you taking Scott Mayfield or Ryan Pulock?
Pulock.
Think about I think it's 3.75 hit versus 6.15.
Like gun to my head.
Remember, Greeny, there's a good
your franchise, so there's always a gun to your head.
So Pulock is 30 years old. He's making 6.15 for the next three seasons.
When
after
does his
this
modified
one,
kick in?
His modified, I believe it kicks in this.
Nope.
This offseason. Okay, I'm checking.
Two more years.
No.
It's like two more years, I think. 2020.
Pulock is
this year. Pulock is another two, I think.
I, for some reason, can't find this here. Oh, here
God
it is.
God damn it, Washington.
No, I got
Capitals
it.
Buying cap friendly.
Years 1 through 5, full no trade. Years 6 through 8, 16 team no trade. So,
what year is he in for the deal?
This is year 3. So, he's got a couple more years until that kicks in.
Yeah.
And then
bye, Adam Pellick.
I guess, well, the other thing was Mayfield. Mayfield is, where is he on here? He's 32 years old. He's making $3.5 million for the next three seasons after this one. And I don't believe.
Five seasons. He signed a 7-year deal.
It's after this one, one, two. No, it's only. This website is so stupid.
Keep scrolling, buddy. Keep scrolling. Five more years after.
You're right. 5 more years at $3.5 million.
Number 23. Never forget, Lou.
Yeah, that's bad. All right, yeah, I'm still going Pulock. Yeah.
So if you're the GM of the other team, you'd rather take Pulock than
because
I'd rather take Mayfield sooner. No, because Mayfield, if you buy him out after a few years, if he's bad, it's really, I think it's like a really team friendly situation where it's not a lot of money, especially under this new salary cap. And honestly, when you look at both players and assess what they are at this point, I actually think Mayfield has more to give than Pulock in like those situations.
And I think a team, like if you throw Mayfield on a team with a 3.5 hit, that they kind of know, they're one of those teams that they kind of know going into every year they're going to be in the playoffs, and that cap hit's not going to kill you throughout the rest of the roster. He helps in the playoffs, right? Like that's when he steps up a little bit. He's a big body. So if you're like a Toronto style team that reportedly did check in on him. That's like a good fit to me for him because they know they're going to make it. They have a lot of skill. They kind of need more jam and grit and toughness on the back end. So like you could find good fits for Scotty. I almost think it's harder because of the cap hit. It's harder to find really good fits rather for Pulak.
Do you guys think that teams look at Ryan Pulak and still think that he has some offensive upside because he could shoot the puck 110 miles an hour?
I don't know.
Not anymore.
I think I think they might look at him and say, well, he could be a middle pair shutdown guy still. I mean, if Jacob Trouba got traded for assets, what do you think they think of Pulak?
Yeah, exactly.
There's enough dinosaur GMs, as we always say.
All right. So then in that sense, we're mostly going Pulak. Jack, you're going Mayfield. Are there any other guys on the roster who we think are impossible to move?
Engvall.
He said, no. I think the initial question
the initial one was aside from Engvall. I think Engvall's the obvious one.
Hot take. He asked for a hot take.
Well, I think actually Varley. But he has a no trade clause, right?
If Varley, yeah. But if Varley was healthy, you know, you get value for him.
Oh yeah.
I'm trying to think, is there someone else? I feel like there's someone else on a long term deal.
It's because the cap going up really changed so much of how we look at all.
Opened
of
it
this.
Up for us.
Yeah, like Pulak and Mayfield, like 2 years ago, if they were playing like this, there's nowhere to move them. You have to add a draft pick.
And prior to this year, keep in mind that Pelech was kind of the guy we were all hoping we'd be able to move and looking
I'm
at the data.
Still sort of hoping.
I'm really not.
Yeah, and
for
the
that.
Injury history, too, you got to keep that in mind. Like,
yeah. Guy's got scored zero goals. He's constantly hurt.
But you know what? When Tony D'Angelo.
I think he's been better this year, but it wouldn't be the worst thing.
When D'Angelo, Boquist, and Dobson can add some element, it makes it so much easier to just rely on him in his own zone and be happy with that. Like, I think he's probably. When it comes to pure defending, he's definitely our best defenseman right now.
Pelech?
Yeah, I think
so.
Yeah,
I agree. But I also think if you, like, we don't have any studs. And I like George, but I'm not super high on George. But at least you have a guy in the system that could come up and play a similar role when he develops, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you draft a kid in this draft, you're what, 3, 4, 5 years away from him being a factor on the NHL team as a defenseman?
Don't sleep on Jesse Pulkkinen.
Well, I hope so, but...
No, I honestly wouldn't be opposed if the Islanders' strategy, like in the draft the next couple of years, is trying to go defense heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Because...
I think the NHL, though, Greeny, and I think you'd agree with this, like, yes, you want to get all positions, but because they're so young, I feel like you usually go BPA.
No, absolutely. And defensemen take so long to develop anyway, so you really don't know what they're going to be. But, like, we've always been so much on, like, the Islanders need skill. They need high-end talent up front, which they still do. But I think they're in a better spot, that aspect. They have no defenseman coming up besides Isaiah George.
Yeah, they need. Like,
yeah.
Hopefully Polkinen's a Teemu Hedman, but wishful thinking.
Yeah, Teemu, and he's not a Robin Salo.
Oh, God.
All right. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Follow us on the socials and subscribe to the podcast. Go Islanders!
Father wears his Sunday best. Mother's tired, she needs a rest. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's saying in her sleep. Brother's got a date to keep. He can't hang around. Io's house in the middle of our street. House.